To quote Thomas Jefferson, a well-informed citizenry is the best defense against tyranny. Welcome to the Constitution Solution, one podcast under God, where we discuss the basics of our constitutional republic and how our freedoms are being seized by public officials, both elected and unelected. I'm Mark DeLuzio, a former candidate for the U.S. Congress and a Gold Star father. Join me as we learn together how we can save this unique experiment that we call America. Hi, welcome to episode 58 of the Constitution Solution, one podcast under God. Took the month of December off. I needed a little bit of break, but back at it here in 2026. As a matter of fact, today is January 7th, 2026, looking to have gotten this up on January 1st, but little behind the times, very busy holiday season for us with family and friends, which was really great. And lots of discussion about politics and where our country's headed and where the world is headed, for that matter. This episode, back in December, I was in New York City and I got invited to a fundraiser for Senator Tom Cotton out of Arkansas. And I want to start out by saying I like Tom Cotton. I like Senator Tom Cotton. He's got a great military background. He's serving our country in the Senate. And I do appreciate the sacrifice that, you know, people who serve not only in the military but in politics do make. I happen to get a little taste of that when I ran for Congress in 2022. And it is a sacrifice in a lot of different ways, okay? And of course, everybody thinks they could do your job better than anybody else, right? But I did challenge the senator. I think the last time I checked, he had a Freedom Index rating of about 70. That's not stellar, but it's not terrible either. Okay, there's some Republicans that have a much worse Freedom Index than he does. However, we went to this fundraiser. Very exclusive club in New York, the Knickerbocker Club, and a lot of high rollers there, for the senator. And it got to, he made his speech and he talked about what a great job the administration is doing on inflation and all this. Okay. So I think I was the first or second to ask him a question. There were about, I don't know, 30 people in the room. And I said, Senator, let me ask you this. I said, first of all, thank you for your service, both in the military and in the Senate. And sometimes I wonder which one's more dangerous. Okay. But I said, you know, every single Republican that I remember hearing in the last campaign, the last election cycle, ran as fiscal conservatives. Okay. Matter of fact, they ran as constitutional fiscal conservatives. With that being said, how is it that we passed a $6.8 trillion spending bill with a $5.2 trillion tax base? You just got through talking about what a great job we did on inflation. However, that's an inflationary bill because in order for us to meet our commitments of $6.8 trillion, we're going to have to borrow more money. And in order to borrow more money, we'll get it from the Fed, who will buy our Treasury instruments, and they'll have to expand the money supply, which is the true definition of inflation. They'll have to print money again. So how is that going to help us here? How is it these fiscal conservatives passed, you know, what we're calling this big, beautiful bill? I would agree with part of that name is it is big. I'm not sure how beautiful it is when you really get cut through it and get down to it. So his answer to me was, well, you got to understand, you always got to understand, but you got to understand that 4 months of that 12-month bill was Joe Biden's bill. And, you know, with continuing resolutions, and I stopped him right there. I said, Senator, look, I don't mean to give you a hard time here, but I need to say to you, the American public doesn't understand what a continuing resolution is. And all these parliamentary things that you guys talk about, they haven't the foggiest about what that stuff is. But can I tell you from what I'm hearing, whether or not it's representative or not, I don't know. But the administration, I'm a big fan of President Trump, don't get me wrong, okay? The administration, let me go back on that. I'm a big fan of President Trump, but I'm a bigger fan of the Constitution. Okay? The administration waved red meat in front of the American public when Elon Musk went in with Doge. Okay? And they found all this fraud and all this waste, but it didn't get translated to your spending. And the American public was set up. And by the way, I said there may be a million reasons why it didn't show through. It doesn't matter because it's all about perception. Tulsi Gabbard went out and said, we got the goods on Obama. Heard nothing about that since. The Epstein files, nothing. The JFK files, nothing. And I can go on and on. We set Americans up for this huge revelation that we're going to uncover January 6th and what really happened there. Nothing. Okay. So the Republican Party has an image problem. He goes, well, yeah, I agree. He said, I don't think it was handled all that well. Okay. But never really answered the question about the 6.8 trillion. Okay. So he was talking about all the great work they're doing on the healthcare system, which to me, constitutionally, they shouldn't be working on healthcare at all. But the US government now spends about, we get my numbers correct, about 30% of the total healthcare spend in this country is spent by the federal government. And when you add state governments to that, it's close to 50%. So you can argue that half of the healthcare industry is controlled by the governments of our nation. And so I raised my hand again and I said, look, I said, I learned in business a long time ago that you cannot optimize anything that sits within a suboptimal framework. And I went on to say that, you know, when you look at the malaise that's going on with the Federal Reserve, we can't even audit them, okay, with the Federal Reserve system. When you look at the unchecked, unconstitutional agencies that write regulation that you should be writing in the legislature, these regulations have the power of law. I have a whole episode on that somewhere back when. When you look at the money that's being spent and the fraud and how we give money to universities with $60 billion endowments and the foreign aid that we provide, even to our adversaries, do you know that we still give foreign aid to Cuba and to China? The framework is, and how Congress actually, you know, ceded their rights to the executive branch in terms of tariffs. There's all Article 1, Section 8 responsibilities of Congress in terms of the war, going to war. The framework is broken. So we can sit here all day and talk about what we're going to do with healthcare, but it's in a framework that is drastically broken. Who is working on the framework? And what has Congress done since the summer after they passed this big, beautiful bill that supports President Trump's agenda? And I guess my question to you is, Is President Trump the only one that wants to reduce the size of government? Is President Trump, do Republicans want him to win? And his answer was this. He said, well, maybe not in the first term, but definitely in this term. I was surprised by that answer. Okay. So, I happen to think that there's so much money involved, and you can say term limits all you want, but there's no quick fix to this, okay? There's a lot of money involved, and there's a whole industry of corruption and paybacks and looking the other way. And I think it's on both sides of the aisle. And by the way, I'm not accusing Tom Cotton of anything illegal, okay? But what I'm telling you is that I don't see this getting better. It's only getting worse. And I truly do believe that, President Trump is an anomaly. And he's not an insider. He's an outsider. And most people don't want him there, including the Republicans. That's my view. And I don't care what they say. You think Lindsey Graham wants President Trump there, the warmonger himself, that would bob the universe if he was able to? I'd love to look at his bank account. All right. I was at a fundraiser a few years ago, and two senators were at this, only a small group, about 20 people, and we're at dinner. Phil Graham, ex-senator from Texas, and Pat Toomey, senator from Pennsylvania, who, by the way, voted to impeach President Trump. In the he was one of six senators that voted to impeach President Trump. Okay. And Phil Graham said, he started talking about Trump and Joe Biden. I like Joe Biden, he says. He's a good man. He's a good man. But I don't like President Trump. And once he's out of office, we need to get the Republican Party back to where it was. Yeah. That's what he said. Okay. So I raised my hand and said, excuse me, Senator, I didn't realize, because this was a fundraiser. Okay, well, where is that? I spent a lot of money on this fundraiser. I said, Senator, I didn't realize I was at a Democratic fundraiser. And he didn't like that. He didn't like that answer. And I didn't care. I didn't care. Our country is being ruined. We are not following the Constitution. We are treating it only as a convenience when it applies. But nobody's working on the fundamental framework that will be the answer to right-sizing our ship. We have $37 trillion in debt, and there's only $21 trillion in the money supply right now. How the heck is that going to work? Think about it. If everybody took all of their money and gave it to the government to pay off their debt, they'd only pay off 21 million of the 37, I'm sorry, I'm using the word million, trillion. They'd only pay off $21 trillion of the $37 trillion. This is an economic spiral that we've seen in history before. And there's only a couple things that can happen. One is the government could just refuse to pay their debt. And that will just be calamity, okay? And the world will greatly suffer from that. They could revalue the dollar. Everybody's talking about Bitcoin being the golden answer. Well, what if the government comes back and says, like FDR did, he said, hey, it's illegal to own gold. you own gold, you got a 10-year prison sentence and so forth. He bought the gold at 21 bucks and revalued it at, I think, 34, 35, whatever, and paid off the debt coming out of the Depression because they printed money like drunken sailors back then. Okay. That could happen. Okay. It's going to rear its ugly head sooner or later, and we're not, and we're nipping at the bud, at the very minute things that are getting votes and getting people reelected again. But only a few people out there today are really focused on the fundamental framework. MTG was one of them. I got a chance to meet her, and Marjorie Taylor Greene. I think there's a lot more going on as to why she quit. We may never know. She didn't seem like a quitter to me. It could be threats to her family. I don't know. Okay. Rand Paul, a pure constitutionalist. Thomas Massie. I think they're both out of Kentucky, right? These guys get ostracized because they want to follow the Constitution. Congress is not an extension of the executive branch. It's an equal and separate branch of the government. It should have as much power as the president's, as the executive branch, and the judicial branch. Equal powers. But over the years, Congress has ceded their responsibilities, as I indicated earlier, to these unconstitutional agencies. Because if they passed laws that represented those regulations, they'd be kicked out of office. Okay. And then wrote crazy laws that said, oh, yeah, Article 1, Section 8 doesn't matter. Yeah, president can set tariffs. Yeah, president can declare war. Yeah, we don't care about that. Yeah, I'm going to write a law. You can't write a law that supersedes the Constitution. But it's been done, and it's not been challenged. It hasn't been, these things haven't been challenged. And as much as I love President Trump, he needs to be held accountable for some of the things that may be unconstitutional. But nobody in Congress, I just saw Mike Johnson today, yesterday, I guess, said that President Trump attacked Venezuela and he was within his Article 2 powers to do so, authority to do so. I've read Article 2 many times. Over the years, there's nothing in there that indicates he could have gone into Venezuela without first going to Congress for a declaration of war. And please don't start with this, oh, that's not really a war, it's a legal exercise. How you label it does not change the essence, the constitutional essence of the act. You can call it bananas and strawberries if you want. I don't care. It doesn't change the essence of what that was. We attacked the country and pulled out their president. Now, all the other disclaimer, well, he was a criminal. He did this. He did this. We had a bounty on his head. Okay, that's all true. You want to go out and take, oh, he was not duly elected. Okay. Why don't we go to China? You think he was duly elected? The president? How about the Middle East? All those countries over there don't have duly elected. They have kings that are voted in by families. The royalty. Should we just go and take all them out? What if it happened to us? What if some country somehow charged our president with some kind of crime? Attacked Washington and took President Trump and Melania under custody. Would we consider that an act of war? So all I'm saying is that the Congress is at fault in a lot of cases here. There are a bunch of weak players, save a few, and the people that, stick their head out to say, hey, that's wrong. We've got a constitution to follow, get ostracized. We're going to primary you. We're going to do this. We're going to do this. If we don't fix the fundamental framework of our government and get it back to where it's supposed to have been working, we are going to lose our country. And that was my message to Tom Cotton, Senator Tom Cotton. Not that it's going to do any good. So think about it. So think about it. I guess ultimately the responsibility, I can blame Congress all I want, but it re rests with us. It rests with us not challenging our representatives. The fact that your representative did not have a chance to weigh in on Venezuela, which means that you didn't have a chance to weigh in with your representative on it. And please don't give me, well, they can't keep a secret and element of surprise and all that crap. Please stop. Because if it's inconvenient, inconvenience is not an excuse not to follow the Constitution. And most people agreed with the move. My first objection is that the president didn't go to Congress for a declaration of war. Talking about the merits of what he did is a whole nother conversation. I'm stuck back there in the Constitution. I'm stuck back there to say, we just snubbed our nose at it. You know that since World War II, we have never, every president has committed an act of war unilaterally without going to Congress. The last time we declared war was in World War II. So when you talk about Afghanistan, where my son got killed, Iraq, you talk about the Gulf War before that, you talk about Vietnam, and let's talk about Korea. Nobody talks about Korea. Korea, Truman said, no, I don't need to go to Congress because it's a police action. Okay. 37,000 body bags later, that's a hell of a police action, isn't it? Not counting the wounded and the families of those service members. So the reason we're special is because of the Constitution. And the number one thing that makes the Constitution special is the checks and balances between the three branches of government. That's been obliterated, and nobody's working on it. Nobody is working on it. And that was my challenge to President, I'm sorry, to Senator Tom Cotton. And I'm a big fan of President Trump's. I'm a bigger fan of our country and our Constitution because I don't trust anybody in government. Nobody. When I ran for Congress, I got asked that question, how do we know we can trust you? And my immediate answer was, why the hell would you trust a politician? Seriously. I almost wanted to say, what the hell is wrong with you? I didn't say that, but why would you trust a politician? I said, I don't want you to trust me. I want you to hold me accountable. I'll do what I can to earn your trust, okay? But if you want a guarantee from me, you're not going to get one. I'm not going to sit here and tell you I don't cheat on my wife and I don't kick my dog. So I could prove to you that I'm, because if I wasn't honest, I'd lie about that. By the way, I'm not doing any of those things, okay? But I'm just saying, what do you want me to say? I said, how would you answer that question? If I challenged you in that regard, what would you say? That I'm a good guy? I don't know. I told him, I said, you want a guarantee? Go to Home Depot and buy a refrigerator. They'll give you a guarantee. I'm as corruptible as you are, and it's up to you to hold me accountable. And I'll be as honest as I can. I'll show you my financial holdings, so you know I'm not screwing around with some kind of shady stock deal like a lot of these senators and congressmen are. Okay, I'll do what I can to earn your trust, but please don't trust me. Hold me accountable, and if I'm not doing what I told you I was going to do in 2 years, kick my ass out of Congress and put somebody else in. Okay? Don't trust anybody in government. But I guess once you get into the swamp, as President Trump calls it, there's all kinds of different things. Paul Gosar, a friend of mine, Congressman Paul Gosar out of Arizona, who I think is one of the more constitutionally oriented congressmen, he told me, he said, you know, when Mike Johnson took over the speakership, somebody got to him. Somebody got to him. I'm not sure exactly what that meant, but he wasn't thinking and voting the same way as when he was a congressman. Okay. But the power rests with us, the American people. Remember, this is our government, not theirs. This is our government. It's our constitution, which limits their power. It's a check on them. But we are not doing our job. We are ill-informed. We don't understand the Constitution. We don't understand what our rights are. And while everybody is mostly all the MAGA people are clapping and applauding this Venezuelan thing, they don't understand how their rights were abridged. Their rights were abridged by the president not going to Congress for a declaration of war per Article 1, Section 8. And the other excuse I heard was, oh, yeah, well, all the other presidents have done it, so we have precedent. They don't even understand what a legal precedent is. It's not a legal precedent. The fact that a law has been broken time and time again does not mean it's a precedent. It just means that those people got away with it. That's all it means. Anyway, our framework is broken. And I took the opportunity to challenge him. Now, I also had the opportunity to challenge Mike Johnson, Steve Scalise, and Elise Stefanik in person. Okay. And each one of them, I asked the same question. It was about going to war. It wasn't about the economy, like I did with Senator Tom Cotton. I said, how can you guys allow the president? This time it was Biden, okay, to bring our troops into war. He was attacking Jordan and Syria, and he went into Iraq without coming for a declaration of war. And Mike Johnson said to me, well, you know, he's doing a lot of unconstitutional things. For example, he says tuition reimbursement. And I stopped him right there and I said, wait a minute, Mr. Speaker, in all due respect, tuition reimbursement does not even come close to putting our men and women in harm's way. From a unilateral decision by the president, which our founders were dead against. How is it that you guys in Congress are allowing him to do that? And I got a word salad. I got a word salad out of Steve Scalise, and I got a word salad out of Elise Stefanik. They're very good at that, by the way. Very skilled at the word. We thought Kamala Harris was good at word salads. Their word salads are pristine, let me tell you. So, I'm doing what I can in my own little world to challenge people when I have the opportunity to meet them. I don't think it's doing any good. You got to have masses. You got to have massive people to get together. And when a congressman gets 150 letters about the same subject, all of a sudden they're taking notice. You get one, you might get a form letter back if you're lucky. I've written congressmen before and never got even a response. But they will listen to the masses because they're thinking is if I get 100 letters on a particular topic, there's got to be another 1,000 out there that could make swing the difference in my next election. That's how it goes. It's the way it is. And if, unfortunately, politics, I kind of knew this anyway, but it really hit home when I ran for Congress, does not attract the best and the brightest. And I'm not saying everybody's an idiot. Don't get me wrong. There's some very sharp people in politics. But there's also a lot of people who are unbelievably arrogant and ignorant. which they pass for knowledge and skill and brilliance. People would ask me, hey, how would that guy ever get to go to work at Danaher, where he used to work? Well, how would he do there? He'd never get hired. The system doesn't reward meritocracy. You know, I learned that in order for you to get a seat on a committee, you got to play ball. When Eli Crane pushed back on McCarthy when he first got to Congress, Eli's the guy that beat me. He was stripped of all his committeeships. And if you want to be head of any of these committees, you got to raise a certain amount of money just to be considered. Doesn't mean you don't have to know anything about banking to be on the banking House Ways and Means or whatever. You don't have to know anything about that stuff. You just have to be able to raise money. The framework is broken, okay? I'm not suggesting I have all the answers on how to fix it, but we've got to get some people in there that could challenge the status quo. Right now, the only one I see doing that is President Trump. He's a Lone Ranger, and everybody's just biding their time until he's gone, because none of the stuff that he's done with executive orders were transmitted into legislation. None of it. Congress is just waiting him out. They're waiting him out to leave, to get some kind of establishment person in there to take over. Anyway, I kind of went off the deep end on some of this other stuff with Senator Tom Cotton, but he maybe was a good setup for all these other things I wanted to talk to you about. Okay. And if we follow the Constitution, most of these issues would go away. But as John Adams said, the Constitution was meant only for a moral and religious people. It would not be suited for any other government. And Madison, who's the father of the Constitution, said, we wouldn't need a Constitution if men were angels. And they're not angels. So I'll leave you with that. I know it's kind of a depressing opening episode for 2026, but hopefully there could be some good things that happen down the line. Okay? Until then, God bless.
Thanks for listening to The Constitution Solution, one podcast under God. The Constitution is the solution to most of our country's problems. Other episodes can be found on our website at 1787solution.com, YouTube, Rumble, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and most other podcast platforms. I'm your host, Mark DeLuzio. Until next time, may God bless you, may God bless America, and may America bless God.